For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valenti, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Dan Devone is not just a person, he's an entity. He is, in some cases, omnipotent.
Now, back to 95.7 The Game.
Oh, I'm glad to be rocking with you. Big Kahuna, Dan Devone, 9 to noon. My name's Evan Giddings. Look, we always kind of stumble into, I don't know, these different sports conversations that captivate me, Dan. Last segment, you know, Filmo Mike called in and, you know, he did label us as, users of the devil's lettuce, so to speak, and, you know, was kind of telling us about ourselves through particular strains. But he also brought up a subject that I find fascinating, which is about these players that ask us to reevaluate what we're watching in sports. And I would define them as blank check players. And that's where I want to kick off this conversation as we enter hour number two here on Saturdays on The Game. And I'm not sure how many there are in the Bay Area. And I've, you know, kind of threw it out. Our YouTube chat, powered by First NorCal Credit Union, was throwing in some really nice suggestions. I honestly think the only blank check player in the Bay Area right now is Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because, so Estimated Eyes, one of our loyal listeners and P1 YouTubers, threw out a lot of names around sports, right? We threw out Shohei, Judge, Jokic might be one, Giannis, Mahomes. These are the suggestions. But an interesting name came up. Because if I asked you on the San Francisco 49ers, who is the blank check player for them? If there is one, who would it be? For the San Francisco 49ers. They just paid Brandon Ayuk 4 years, $120 million. They gave out a ton of money to Christian McCaffrey in guarantees this offseason. They paid Bosa what he wanted last year, Debo the year before. They've committed $350 million in cash towards this season.
If I had to pick one.
If you had to pick one, who would it be?
George Kittle.
Wow. George Kittle.
Yeah.
How come?
Well, first of all, it's his value as a tight end. I think he's surpassed Kelce for being the best in the NFL right now. I think that, and Kelce is very good in the postseason, but during the wake of the season, I think that when healthy, George Kittle is physically where this all begins, right? In terms of being a catching tight end, not only a guy who receives the ball, but being able to get in those seams downfield, running after the catch, blocking, all those things that we know George Kittle to be one of the greatest to ever do it. But if I had to pick the reason why he's the blank check guy, it's because he is the leader of that team, in my estimation, that I think that he is the personality on that team, that you remove George Kittle from the San Francisco 49ers and they cease to be, in terms of what we, you know, our perception of them currently as being the Super Bowl contender.
So
George Kittle is the guy.
No, I think that sort of, I don't know, like innate quality of leadership, being the face of a franchise, being a representative, in addition to just a high-class athlete, that is to me what being a blank check player is. I personally don't think that Kittle's that guy. I don't think the Niners have one, to be honest.
Well, I thought the game was we had to pick one.
Well, if I have to pick one, Yeah, you got me there. If I have to pick one, it's the guy that is holding out right now. It's Trent Williams. If I have to pay a single player on the 49ers whatever they want, it's Trent Williams. It's not the quarterback. It's not Nick Bosa. Mm. It's not Christian McCaffrey. It's not Fred Warner. It's Trent Williams.
But blank check. So if we're to go by pure definition, mm-hmm. I think there's a number, there's a ceiling on how much. I give him as much money as he wants, but in terms of blank check, again, that value, I'd argue George Kittle for the reasons I just stated, for what it is that he means in terms of the overall persona of that team. Like, I don't know, say, you know, look, at Jalen Moore is not as good as Trent Williams. I think you're looking at this exclusively from wins and losses and an impact between the lines. But blank check to me, well, I would write him the biggest check, but blank check sort of goes into a whole other sort of stratosphere.
You would write the biggest check for the team to George Kittle.
No, I would write the biggest check. Maybe I'm contradicting myself. For, listen, if Trent Williams wants to be the highest paid at his position, I'd write him the biggest check in the history of left tackles.
I think
for blank check, meaning in terms of value, I think George Kittle has more value to that football team at the end of the day than Trent Williams.
I think with what Trent just stabilizes on that team, it's him for me. And statistically, they are just so much better when he's on the field. And that's why I'd find it interesting that he's the one guy that's still not under lock and key. And I think it's because he has asked not for a blank check, but for a boatload of money. And the reports are out there that the Niners and he are not close. I still think there's plenty of time for them to figure this out. I'm not too concerned about it, to be honest. I still think he'll be there week one against the Jets. But I think it is because he is a blank check player. You know, he has a number in mind. The Niners maybe don't want to come near it. I'm not too sure. If Trent Williams asked for $30 million, would you pay him? Because I would.
Yeah, sure. Why not? I can't do, like, well, I said at the top of the show.
It's not our money, but.
Exactly. I cannot. I have no room. I have no bandwidth to get into contract talk after what it is that we just did with Brandon Ayuk. Like, I can't even begin to think about how much money, and the two sides are not even close. Like, I am so dumb with it. Just sign the dude. And when you do, we can talk about it. You can talk to the listeners about numbers and how far apart the two sides are. I'm exhausted.
Well, no, but this is the exercise. Just if you were to present a player with a blank check, who would that be? For Dan DeVone, it's George Kittle. For me, it's Trent Williams. Right now, I would not present. I know that they restructured his contract and gave him more money and made him the highest paid player in addition to what he was already making in his position. If Christian McCaffrey asked for a blank check, I would not give it to him.
Yeah.
Because of the position that he plays.
Exactly.
If Brandon Ayuk asked for a blank check, I would not give it to him. If Brock Purdy right now asked for a blank check, I would not give it to him. The only player on the Niners that I would give a blank check to and say, write what you want, and I will hand you that dough, is Trent Williams. Because I think he is that important to where this season is supposed to go.
When we talk about checks, blank or otherwise, you know what I find sort of ironic in all of this? Now, I know there's a salary cap involved, so it's not necessarily apples and apples, but how we peruse through these contracts, and Brandon Ayuk, perfect example, and we know every dollar amount and where it's allocated and the salary cap hit and how much is deferred and how much is guaranteed and the APY and all of his money is out there for public consumption. And there are a lot of people that feel as though, you know, we had this conversation in the first hour. Who won? Who lost? And there's some that actually take it a step further and feel that, the 49ers are getting, you know, this guy's greedy or this player's greedy and the 49ers are having to pay this guy how much money? And there's almost some empathy on the part of the 49ers. Let me just remind everybody that while we can all see and we can all go through every dollar amount that is in the contract, the guaranteed numbers for that of Brandon Ayuk, nobody, nobody opens up the books to the San Francisco 49ers. Like, nobody goes through, and let me just remind everybody that Jerry Jones' franchise is worth $11 billion annually. The 49ers are a $1 billion team annually in terms of their overall revenue. If you went through their books, and I'm saying God bless, everybody get theirs, right? But when you think about the television contracts, as well as the streaming contracts, and then you think about all the gambling revenue, football is a good place to be if you're an owner because you are just making money hand over fist. But nobody has the opportunity through a paper or a website where we can just say, oh, look how much money they're making. Because if we did, it would put the $30 million per year for one Brandon Ayuk in a very different perspective. Now, I get it. The reason why we focus so much on Brandon Ayuk is because of the salary cap. And that you have to work within certain parameters so that you can afford everybody. But this idea that the 49ers got taken to the cleaners or any sentimentality or empathy on the part of the 49ers having to spend this much money, I think it's important for all of us to keep in mind just how much revenue NFL football teams, including the San Francisco 49ers, make at the end of a year.
But also how much they're willing to spend. Again, they will be the top spenders in the NFL this upcoming season. They were at or near the top last season.
Point being is they can afford it. And I get it. Not everybody spends as much as they do, but they can afford it.
Yeah, but Jerry Jones is somebody that chooses to not spend his money. You know, and that's where I think that the ownership group does deserve credit. They are willing to put their money where their mouths are to compete for a Super Bowl. And that's why it has been frustrating the past couple of seasons to watch this team fall short of the eventual goal, which is to win it all, because they have so much freaking talent. So much talent. And I know that there are other teams around the NFL that, and even in the NFC, that you and I both like, and I think that have gotten better, and that have comparable rosters. But the Niners are the most, I don't know, like, to me, they're the most cohesive of the talented groups. They have been together for the longest amount of time. They have the chemistry. They have the experience of being in the trenches, of being in big games, of understanding what it takes to get to the Super Bowl. Maybe not win a Super Bowl, but get to a Super Bowl. And that would be the one advantage that they have over a team like Philly or a team like Detroit or a team like Green Bay, who I think a lot of people are high on this season.
Are they cohesive defensively? Like, offensively, all those guys have been together for a while.
That's a good point.
Defensively, I think they were third in the NFL, I want to say, in terms of points allowed last year. Both offense and defense, they were like number three, respectively, which is the balance you want to have. But I know what my eyes saw a year ago. They couldn't get off the field on third down. There seemed to be, especially the taste in our mouths at the end of last season against Green Bay and Detroit. Like, I know what it is that I saw. And yes, they're littered with the Fred Warners and the Boses and the Hargraves, and they got boys. But again, my eyes don't lie. And that was a team that got shredded in the postseason. And there just seems to be some holes. And I don't know if that cohesion applies to that side of the ball.
Well, I think a lot of people threw that at the foot of Steve Wilks. Or the feet of Steve Wilks, just basically, I don't know if he was, felt to me like he was kind of scapegoated, felt to me like a lot of players didn't feel like they were being used properly instead of taking it upon themselves to just simply play better. You know, I defer more to Fred Warner's stance when what she was basically saying, like, we just got to, you know, the players playing coaches coach, we got to be better. But I do think there's a reason why Shanahan decided to split up defensive duties this year. You know, Sorensen's the coordinator, but Staley's also going to be the eyes in the sky. He's going to help schematically during the week, and then he's going to be an extra set of hands and eyes during games. You know, I don't think Shanahan trusted his defense last year, and maybe that's what he's trying to address, Devone, is he's trying to address those cohesive issues that I didn't think showed up in the Super Bowl, but to your point, they were certainly clear in the Detroit game, especially in the first half when they gave up like a 170 on the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, they couldn't stop anybody. So I think defensively, I'm curious to see how the Niners react this season because I think they have a ton of talent. I think they avoided disaster with Leonard Floyd and Gross Matos, for example, getting hurt in the final preseason game. Floyd looks like he's going to be someone that's available come week one. He's had a great track record of maintaining his health and being on the field and producing, even though he's north of 30. And then, honestly, I think that the defensive line to me is going to be dictated by how great of a season Nick Bosa has. And I do expect him to have a great season because he's had a full off season and he's been engaged and he's been there for voluntary workouts. He's been there for summer workouts. He's been there for all of training camp. He didn't go through what he did last off season. And when he's had full time to prepare in whatever fashion, whether he's there or not, he has been one of the top two, if not the best edge rushers in football.
Yeah. And he's always sort of relying on at least somebody else putting some pressure on the other edge.
But he's never had any help, though. I mean, last year, the most sacks outside of Nick Bosa from that spot was like Cleveland Farrell, and he had somewhere south of five. Like, I think Amenihu and Ebukam 2 years prior were the second sack-leading players on the Niners with like five sacks. I mean, it's Nick Bosa, and then it's everybody else.
It'd be nice if you can get some sort of pressure from whether it's Hargrave or it's... Because I think Floyd is sort of this one-dimensional hire to hand that he's not good against the run, that he's there for one reason, and that is to put pressure on a quarterback. So he's going to be in obvious throwing downs. In fact, I think he got hurt in trying to support the run. That's not what he does. That's what, you know, big Jordan Elliott and some of these other... the Collins, Malik Collins, who they brought over from Houston. That's what those guys do. But it's nice if you can get somebody else to at least alleviate a double team and a running back that are all there to sort of chip and help against one Nick Bosa. But yeah, he's so good that if he's physically peaked and ready to go, he can defeat all of that.
But I also don't think we're going to learn how good this defense is until probably midway through the season. Number one, because it takes some time, but also because they're not going to be whole. You know, Dre Greenlaw is not going to be on the field. Talanoa Hufanga is probably not going to be on the field. He's working his way back from a season-ending injury a year ago. So is Greenlaw, tearing his Achilles in the Super Bowl. This team is not going to be whole until midway through the year. And so I'm interested to see how they perform. You know, I'm interested to see which group stands out, because it seems like it's always been on the defensive line. And I think this year the secondary could take a step forward for the Niners. You know, this is a team that can be better in pass coverage than they've been in years past. So I think that for me, like what I'm looking for is how quickly they come out of the gates, because go back 365 days, there were questions about what the Niners, like how fast that they would start. And they calmed all concerns by just boat racing Pittsburgh week one on the road and then jumping out to a 5-0 start. I don't know if they need to start 5-0, but I do believe that we're going to learn a lot about this team and where they are at, where they've been at this entire offseason based on how they play against the Jets.
I think there's a good chance that the Jets beat them soundly. Being that guy, and not that they're going to be a bad team this year, but I just think early on, the mojo with that Jet team for one game.
R-E-L-A-X.
And then when we think about the 49ers, who are still not out of the woods in terms of internal drama, because Trent Williams is still out there after what it is that we saw with Brandon Ayuk. I am a proponent.
Would you still consider that drama?
Well, he's not in camp. I mean, he's not there, and so there is still, at least, albeit the door is in a jar, it's not very wide, but it's still a jar that you may have Jalen Moore protecting the blind side of one Brock Purdy against Quinnen Williams and the boys from that of the New York Jets. The Jets have been pointing at this damn thing since they went to a Super Bowl in the late 1960s. I'm just saying, for one game to begin a season, that Aaron Rodgers' return and all of the excitement, which you just don't see in New York for the Jets, is real. And I just think that the 49ers, with all the turbulence of this offseason, could be susceptible in week one, when you're thinking about just two teams heading in different directions, that the 49ers may not be at peak level emotionally to handle a Jet team that has been pointing up this game and this season forever, or so it appears.
See, but I also think that that buildup is something that could, that has them teetering. Like, the Jets are a team that there's a lot of expectations on them, and I think they're unnecessarily high. People are talking about the New York Jets about, people are talking about if they can go to the Super Bowl with a 40-year-old quarterback coming off an Achilles tear. That's a really high bar to set.
I don't even want to go that far. I'm just talking about, I think at the end of the year, the 49ers' one-loss record will be better than that of the Jets. I'm looking at this exclusively through the vacuum of week one. I'm just a bit afraid that the 49ers, as much as you say, oh, it's a football game and emotionally they'll be ready to go, this stuff has a weird way of rearing its head, maybe in week one and week two before you begin to sort of hit your stride. And I'm just saying there's a buzzsaw coming to town in the name of the New York Jets.
But it's not as if they're not dealing with issues. I mean, Hassan Reddick is still not present. He's still racking up fines. And that's a guy that they traded for this offseason.
Well, it's not an issue because, as we discussed, basically it's bro, play or don't play. There is no negotiations, or there's no back and forth, or there's no scratching your, you know, the meat. There's no scratching your cell phone from whatever it is that they do. There is none of this sort of, you know, verbal darts that are being traded by both sides.
But I think if you're going to describe the Williams saga as drama, Hassan Reddick is drama. This guy literally asked for a trade after being traded to a team that he knew he was going to have to play for. And yes, the GM came out and shut it down and all the rest. And I think a lot of people are wondering if the Niners should have done that with Ayuk or maybe Williams. No, not Trent, but with Ayuk when he asked for a trade. But if you're going to say that there's still distractions on the Niners, I can use the exact same argument to say that the Jets have their own set of issues.
But I would say that, or I would counter that, the anticipation.
Because I don't think either is that big of an issue to their respective teams. I don't think Trent Williams is considered a distraction by the 49ers. And the way that the Jets have handled it, I'm not sure I would consider or believe that they consider Reddick a distraction to them.
I just think the anticipation of this season for the New York Jets outweighed whatever distraction Hassan Reddick was or is for the New York Jets.
But isn't anticipation just another form of expectation? Like, they're expected to be good this year. They're expected to compete. That is something that does not generally follow the New York Jets, who are a team which I believe has the longest playoff drought in the NFL currently. I mean, this is a very hungry fan base, obviously. The Jets have a very hungry fan base. I don't know. I just feel like people have put a lot on the Jets this offseason, and they're kind of putting the cart before the horse.
Well, they're going to be better than they were last year. And last year, they were a 7-win team with probably the worst quarterback in the last decade in Zach Wilson. 7 wins. You can't, and I'm not an Aaron Rodgers guy. I think he's a tremendous football player, but just personally, I'm out on the guy.
Yeah.
But even me will give him his flowers that he can get them at least 2 or 3 more wins, which is good enough. 10 wins is getting you to the postseason.
And you would think.
It's that defense, and they got serious stars. From Breece Hall to Cedric Wilson to Mike Williams and a revamped offensive line. And yes, Aaron Rodgers. Look at, if Tom Brady could take you to a Super Bowl at age 40, why can't Aaron Rodgers? Yeah, again, I don't know. I have no idea where they're going to end up when it's all said and done with, but I think in week one, it's a bad matchup for the San Francisco 49ers.
By the way, speaking of the Jets stars, did you see what happened to Quinnen Williams? I think, was it last week with Jim Rome?
What do you do?
Dude, so Quinnen Williams went on Jim Rome's show, and he was asked, you know, he's going on to promote his brand or some sort of thing, and Jim Rome, I guess, doesn't ask him a lot about the brand. You know, he's asking him about Rodgers or the Jets or kind of the juicy storylines for the New York football season, and Quinnen Williams basically is like, dude, I'm here to talk about my product. And so Jim Rome basically... he doesn't hang up on him, but he just cuts the interview short and proceeds to rip him for the next 5 to 7 minutes about how, you come on my show, I ask you questions. If I want to plug your product, I can do that, but that's not what I'm here to do. It's your job to come on my show and ask questions. It was, honestly, it was bizarre. I'm not saying either side was right or wrong. I generally side with a player there, but at the same time, like, I can understand if you're interviewing a player and, you know, you want to ask him a question or two outside of just what their product is, and they're not going to talk about it.
Well, that's how Romy made a name for himself. That's who he is.
Just ripping guys?
Well, I mean, go back to how he jumped onto the scene when he called Jim Everett Chrissy Everett.
Yeah.
You won't do it to my face.
That one worked out for him, didn't it?
You won't do it to my face. Yes, I will, Chris. Boom! That's who he is. He's sort of like, he lives in that space of controversy, that no one's bigger than me and that I'll stand up to anybody. So,
you've interacted with a lot of athletes. You ever felt like one was going to slug you?
Well, you know who used to scare the... There were two guys that actually literally would intimidate me. It was Mike Tyson and Mike Holmgren. Like, I think Holmgren was this big bolt. This is when he was the head coach.
Hold on. When did you talk to Mike Tyson?
I broke my back.
It was more of a pool reporting thing. It wasn't necessarily he and I in a one-on-one, but okay. I do remember... Like, that's the one guy I would not want to, like, sit down one-on-one and have to ask him a tough question, because he's a guy who just doesn't give a damn. He'll get up and punch you and worry about the consequences later. Like, he just wasn't wired right back in the day. He's obviously gone very zen since then. And Mike Holmgren obviously wasn't going to punch you or anything, but in terms of intimidating, he was like just this huge mountain of a man. And the way he didn't like me to begin with, and he spoke in just his very deliberate terms and would just look right through you. Were two very challenging interviews. But
well, we do have to hit a break, but on the other side, we are going to go down the list of athletes that have wanted to punch Dan Devone on 95.7 The Game. But no, really what we're getting into is the weight of expectations. The Niners have a weight of expectation that I think is comparable but different to the weight of expectation of their week one opponent, of the New York Jets. How does that impact the way you view this matchup? Who's got more riding on it? Is it because of the contracts that have been signed or haven't been signed? Who would you give a blank check to right now in the San Francisco 49ers? We're taking your calls. We're taking your texts. 888-957-9570. Evan Giddings alongside Dan Devone. This is Saturdays on The Game. We're back after this.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Big Dog, do you really think that I would bring you on this show only to talk about your product? Do you think I care that much about that product? Or even at all? Do you really think that was our agreement? Come on and just get a bunch of free advertising that other people pay for. My guy, that's not how that's done. So again, without totally losing it and going off, I want to reiterate, great player, really good dude. Very poor execution.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Well, that was Jim Rome 5 days ago on his show talking about Quinnen Williams, the defensive tackle for the New York Jets, who, again, will be here in 9 days at Levi's Stadium, Monday Night Football, 5:15 kickoff. Evan Giddings alongside Dan Devone on 95.7 The Game. That was Jim Rome. Basically just saying his piece. Like, love you, Big Dog. And what happened preceding that is Quinnen Williams came on to the Jim Rome show and was asked about the New York Jets, and basically just wanted to talk about his product. And so Jim Rome was like, that's not what we do here. I'm going to ask you questions, and you're getting free advertisement.
Well, one thing you cannot do, Quinnen Williams, if that's the way you feel about it, and you're unhappy that he's not giving more love or showcasing your product, you can't just leave. Because if you leave, and it's somebody like that, a Jim Rome or a network broadcaster, you've just given them a blank slate just to rip you with no recourse, right? And that's, they have time that's allotted, right? Because you know how these shows work. Well, we got like from 10 o'clock to 10:20, you're going to talk to Quinnen Williams. And if you just leave, you've now just given them free reign to go after you. And like never just leave an open mic to somebody like that of Jim Rome just to simply lay into you without you know, providing your side of the story. Like, that's not a wise move, my man. Like, you can stay on the show and say, look it, man, you know, go back at him and say, can we get into my product? And Jim Rome may go after you and say, although I think it's going to be a lot more tempered if you're actually having that conversation with Quinnen Williams as opposed to Quinnen Williams leaving, and now I can say whatever the hell it is that I want.
Well, even if you're in the right, and I don't know how respectful or disrespectful Williams might have perceived Rome to be during the actual interview. Like, I've seen some athletes here in the Bay Area that are not very happy with the questions that they're being asked, either because they've had a bad game or because they feel like they're not about the game, they're unfair, maybe it's a leading question. You know, reporters oftentimes, I think, are trying to find an angle because either they're writing a story or they're trying to uncover something or, you know, report, basically. But I do think that there is a line that sometimes gets crossed about what's fair and what's not as far as a question. Like, I've personally never been in that situation where I feel like an athlete has been pissed at the questions that I've asked them, but I also have not necessarily needed to ask a poignant, difficult question. Like, there are ones that are hard to ask. You know, if you're trying to get into a player's legacy or how they're perceived or how they perceive themselves, you know, those are things that he kind of towed the line a bit. I don't know, Devone, like, you sat down with a lot of high-profile athletes. You've been in pools. You were talking about Tyson. Holmgren, you said, was a bit aggressive. Like,
no, just intimidating.
Intimidating.
Yeah, for me personally. I'll tell you somebody that I had to, Brett Boone back in the day. Remember Brett Boone?
Dude, he's an Odyssey MLB insider now.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he comes on the show every once in a while. He's like the nicest guy in the world.
Well, okay.
What'd you do to piss him off?
I didn't do anything to piss him off, but I think there's a way to go about asking a difficult question back to our original premise here is that, you know, you have to sort of befriend the guy, and then you have to, you know, you have to learn how to sort of work it in. But I remember we had him, I used to do a Sunday night show, like a half-hour show, and it'd be sort of a wrap-up of the week in sports, and he came on, and they said, well, he's coming into studio. And I remember my producer, this is at the time when there were, Jose Canseco had mentioned him in his book,
yeah,
that Aaron Boone was doing steroids. And Aaron Boone was enjoying a huge, not Aaron, Brett Boone was enjoying a huge season. We're talking about Brett Boone, right?
Yeah, Brett Boone with the Mariners, who's
was enjoying a huge season. And I said to my producer, we have to ask him about steroids. And my producer's like, look, he's coming in with his wife. He's driving all the way in from Bellevue. I don't want to do that to the guy. Let's just, can we just stay? I'm like, there's no way in hell that I can have him in studio and not ask him about steroids. And he handled it well, but the question had to be asked. So sometimes it's just like, you got to soften that blow. Like, there's ways of asking the questions. You know, you cannot just simply go after a guy and saying, you know, are you doing steroids, and be confrontational. There's a way that you can befriend him, get the conversation to be a little more jovial, and then just say, hey, listen, I got to
just
do this.
Blindside him.
But yeah, I think there's credibility behind all of that. You can't just, it's easy because we all want to, as fans and as former athletes, we always just sort of want to suck up to these guys. We want to be nice to these guys. It's difficult. And then you don't want to be that guy who's like, well, you know, the prototypical print journalist who just simply is a guy that's got like a ham sandwich in his back pocket and two left feet, and the guy that's just sort of angry at the world and is going to take that angst out on athletes that are, you know, 3 feet taller and much better looking and make 15 times more money. There's always that sort of dynamic that works into this when it comes to sort of print guys back in the day. Now that line's been blurred because a lot of print guys do radio and they do YouTube channels and what have you. So, But yeah, I think that, that difficult questions are all part of this. And, you know, you it has to be part of the oath that you take as a journalist. Maybe not so much in terms of this, but if you ever get an athlete in the room, the difficult questions have to be asked in order for you to be considered having any level of credibility in the industry, I think.
Well, let's take Brandon Ayuk, for example, because eventually he's going to have to speak. He will talk to the media. You know, he put the... I think he had a quill, which is what he used to sign his new contract extension, which I thought was kind of funny. But eventually he's going to have to talk to the media. What do you think the first question is going to be? It's going to be... Well, it's going to follow that sigh, that noise, which we've all made after seeing, huh, this thing's finally over.
What took so long?
I think that's the question. Yeah, what took so long? There's Brandon, there's a lot of conflicting reports out there about the timing of this contract, what was offered to you and when. Your agent said that Schefter wasn't necessarily telling the whole truth. Diana Rossini was reporting that the Niners had an offer to trade you that was contingent upon the Broncos, who said no. There was conflicting reports about trades that you were willing to accept with certain organizations, namely Pittsburgh. How would you sum up the last 2 months? You know, I don't know if that's a fair question, but I feel like something like that, however it's worded, it needs to be asked.
Yeah, that's not a tough question. I think it has to be asked, and I think he can dance around that. I think that if you really wanted to go after him, or if this was New York, I guarantee you there'd be somebody from the Post that would say, hey, listen, the 49ers wanted to drive you to the airport because they were down for a trade for Amari Cooper in a second and fifth round. How does it feel going back and playing for them, knowing that they wanted you out of town? Like, that to me would be the tough question.
Yeah, the Niners had multiple deals for you that they were willing to accept, according to sources. And they nixed them because you weren't willing to sign with that place. If you were willing to sign with the Cleveland Browns, how does it feel to know that the Niners won't have traded your ass to the Colts? No, I don't know. Like, all that stuff is tough.
I think the media, for the most part,
I would also want to know about his decision to hold in. You know, what made you decide that you would rather be at practice as opposed to taking the trend? Because you literally have another example of a guy that's doing a similar thing, only Williams isn't present. So I would ask about that, too.
I heard Bill Belichick had something interesting to say about that. And Belichick said that he'd rather have his players hold in if he was dealing with a contract dispute as a head coach. That way he could keep an eye on him, knew what it is that they were doing, making sure that at least they were, you know, lifting, throwing up some weights, doing the training. At least they were in camp and they were making the effort. And he felt as though he could keep, you know, an eye on what it is that they were doing on a daily basis, as opposed if you're holding out, I don't know, what are you doing? Are you sitting on the couch, just crushing beers, eating whatever? Where are you? Where are you at? There was something to be said, he felt, when somebody was in the building.
See, I find that interesting because Belichick, as a Parcells disciple, strikes me as an old school guy that would essentially not want a distraction in the building or public.
Mm.
I believe that it, you know, he means that, but I just feel like the way that Belichick approached the Patriots was my way or the highway, and if you're in, you're in, and if you're not, you're not. So if it's about money, hold out, but do not be here, because if you are at the facility and you are at practice, I expect you to be in pads. And I also, like, I wonder how someone like Andy Reid has sort of dealt with this offseason, because one thing that flew under the radar amidst all these different negotiations and, you know, mega money talks was the fact that the Chiefs had been going through negotiations with their own players, certainly not to the profile of Brandon Ayuk or CeeDee Lamb or Ja'Marr Chase, who I think has been in and out of practice with the Bengals, but their players have been practicing even during contract negotiations. Mm. And I found it interesting, Dan, that that's the team that won the Super Bowl. Those are the players that understandably would want to get paid for their production and their assistance in winning a Super Bowl, and they're at practice and they're on the field. Meanwhile, other players, and I don't mean to single out Ayuk, this is the case, you can make the case for Chase, case for a few other players, that they're at the facility, they want their money, they didn't win a Super Bowl, and they are a distraction.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is Patrick Mahomes at the end of the day? Because we always have this different set of rules for the Kansas City Chiefs. Oh, they play their players in the preseason. Well, you can't argue against that because they win Super Bowls. Or they do it this way in terms of handling their players. Well, they win Super Bowls. I think all of that is Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes wasn't there, and you were just another a pedestrian-type football team, then none of this stuff is applicable. Just getting back to Bill Belichick, do you think he sort of has he lost a bit of his edge now that he's gone into the media? He just seems more like, obviously, he's aware of the camera. He's got to be more affable. I just feel as though there's a term called jump the shark, which a lot of people use incorrectly.
Something about Fonzarelli?
Oh, my God. Only you, man. Only you. So this gets
Fonz.
Back to Happy Days, where they did this. Fonzie was this, I didn't watch a lot of Happy Days, but Fonzie was this sort of pseudo-gangster, and he was like, it's the 1950s, so he's sort of this hood, but also friends with Potsy.
Like a Grease character.
Yeah. But there was this one episode, and he was always sort of the cool dude with these sort of minimal lines and sort of the hard guy. But there was this one episode, as they were obviously losing an audience, and it was like in their 10th year, what have you, where they're in Los Angeles, and they decided to put Fonzie on water skis, and he's going to jump this shark in the Pacific Ocean. And it just was like this episode where Happy Days had clearly lost its edge. And it's like, what happened to Fonzie? He used to be this grease monkey who was sort of this hard character. Now he's jumping a shark in the Pacific Ocean with his black leather jacket. Like, we've gone soft. We've lost whatever edge we might have had.
So it wasn't even implied in the episode. People just took it and ran with it.
Exactly. And I think that what happened to Bill Belichick is that he was once this guy who didn't give a rip about the media, that he was this monosyllabic, I'll give you a word or two and then I'm moving on, which was sort of his character. And now we see this from time to time where he gets in front of the media, and now he signed a contract with ESPN. Now he's become this loquacious and sort of affable, and now he's got a sense of humor, and he's going back and forth with Pat McAfee. I'm like, I don't know. Give me the crusty guy that was just sort of all about winning football games.
Yeah, he used to be cold as ice, and now he's, you're calling him the Wicked Witch of the West. He's just melting. Like, he just can't find a way to summon that inner, that Belichick, he wasn't even confrontational in a way that was intimidating. Like, you're talking about Holmgren. Like, Holmgren, I don't know, there's just something, maybe it's the appearance, just, I don't know, the presence about him that felt intimidating. I don't think Belichick ever felt intimidating to me, but he just wouldn't let you in. And so I do think that the guy that he is now is who he is. It's part of him. Like, he is, I think he's an affable dude. I like Belichick. Even when he was talking about just on to Cincinnati, I still found it entertaining.
I think somewhere in between the two lies the real Belichick. I think a lot of guys, they get on camera. Saban to a certain degree as well. Saban was, you talk about nasty interviews, he would go after you. Because if you're in Tuscaloosa, he owns, not only does he own Alabama football, he owns the city, he owns the state, he's the highest paid employee in the state. It's, when you talk about Alabama, it's synonymous with one man. He's as powerful as the governor. So you're not asking him difficult questions. And he was pretty cruel to the media. And that was sort of who he was. It was just, I'm sitting here and I'll dictate what it is that we're talking about. Don't ask me any tough questions. You know who the hell I am? And now he's in front of a mic and a camera, and suddenly he's got a big smile on his face and he's this nice guy. Like, come on, man. We're jumping the shark a little bit.
Well, I don't think that's who Saban is, but I think Belichick is being himself. I mean, Saban's a red ass. Like, let's just be honest. That guy seems, you know, like someone who, I don't know if I would want to carry a conversation with for too long if it wasn't about football.
What do you think of Tom Brady? Are you excited to hear and see what it is that Tom Brady, and as far as a color analyst in his first Fox football game?
100%, and I think he'll be good. The one thing that is kind of,
I think you're going to go down the same road that I am.
It's really strange, because so he has part ownership in the Raiders.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
And
access to the team.
He can't talk to teams, which is a big part of preparation if you're a color analyst. I don't care how old you are, how removed you are from the game. I think one of the reasons why I always felt like Dan Fouts was one of my favorite color commentators is because he, it felt like he knew the locker room. you know, it felt like he, even though he hadn't played for years, was still able to connect with the players on the field and bring that to the telecast. I don't know if Brady's going to be able to do that because he legally doesn't have the ability to talk. Ken, you have more.
Yeah, I was going to say he also can't really rip into the refs. I was telling Evan, you know, earlier this week, I was like, yeah, he's got to, he could say that was a bad call, but he can't dive any further.
Right.
Again,
because of the tuck rule.
good call. That's a four. no, he can't get it because I think it goes against his ownership policy.
Wow.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, I guess he
and the players. When you do those meetings, I've never been in one, but they always say that it's unlike a post game interview where you're talking to, say, a Brock Purdy or you're talking to a Deebo Samuel, and they're just sort of giving you, you know.
Yeah, fluff.
Yeah. When you're talking about these guys and you have access to them prior to a game and they come into this conference room, they disclose a lot. And they're very glib about what it is that they're saying.
So the reason why I'm excited to hear Brady, and I don't know, it might get old fast. Who knows? It might.
Who's he calling
Jump the shark. The number one Fox team. I think it's Kevin Burkhardt.
Burkhardt.
Yeah, he's taking over for Olsen, who, by the way, had to take a $7 million pay cut. That stinks. But Brady is somebody that I'm looking forward to hearing because unlike even someone as good as Romo, I think Romo is probably the best player of the current color commentators. Like his career was the best up until Brady steps into the booth. Brady, anytime he criticizes a player, has that right. And I have to listen to him. And I have to give credence to what he's saying. I have to at least think about why he's talking about a player the way he is, or if he's heaping praise on him. You know, one of the reasons I really like watching the Manning cast is because Peyton Manning will be critical of quarterback play. Eli Manning, less so. That's just not really who he is. I think he's just kind of a laissez-faire guy, and I really enjoy him. But Peyton Manning will be critical of decisions. He'll be critical of clock management. He'll be critical of things that he was cerebrally aware of in a cerebral fashion on the field at all times. And so when he is saying something, even if I disagree in the moment, I'm like, oh, well, Peyton Manning's thinking about that. That forces me to think about that. I think Brady can bring that to the booth.
Well, I would say that the Manning cast is a little bit different because it's not as conventional, and that's not the actual broadcast of the game. I think the Manning cast, much like that of a podcast, much like that of a show like this, you can be much more opinionated, right? And you can go after people, as we often do, as the Mannings are allowed to do. When you're actually calling the game and you're the number one team and you're the analyst and the play-by-play guy, I think you have to be, you can't be as voiceful and you can't be as critical of players.
Sorry. Aikman's the best former player that's a color analyst right now.
He's amazing. Collinsworth is good as well, although a lot of people don't like him. But yeah, Aikman's spot on. I think it's very different from what the Mannings do than what it is that Tom Brady is about to embark on. That I think you have to, you can't be as critical of players as maybe in another format like that of the Manning cast. I have no idea because we just don't know his style. Yeah, theoretically, he should know what he's talking about, and I'd listen to him, but it's just, you know this, man. It just depends on whether he can pick his spots. He's easy to listen to. He gets in, he gets out. He's not stepping on the other guy's toes, that it all sort of works in terms of a team. Like that's so nuanced that we won't know until we actually see him in his first broadcast.
Yeah, I mean, the technical aspect of, look, I think color commentating is the most difficult position in broadcasting. And, you know, I'd like to think play-by-play is pretty hard. I do it. I know how difficult it is. But someone that is a color commentator does not get to choose when they start talking and when they end. They have a confined amount of space that is dictated by, you know, a graphic, by a package, by the play-by-play commentator. If you have a guy that talks a lot, well, then you get 8 seconds, really, to explain everything that just happened, and you got to get out. Or it might be working with a partner that is relatively soft-spoken, and you have to fill a ton of time. You know, Collinsworth, like, I think one of the reasons I liked him with Michaels is because Michaels just kind of got out of the way. It felt like Collinsworth drove the broadcast, and there was more of a forum for him to speak his mind on whatever was happening during the play.
Yeah, and Aikman and Buck have a really good rapport with one another. And I think it's when Collinsworth, yeah, he's a little bit more dominant, but when Aikman speaks, it's like E.F. Hutton, you listen. It's usually really spot on. It's informative. It's poignant. He's not, what happens is with a lot of analysts is they talk for the sake of talking. And I always tell you this, that less is more. And sometimes the guy that lays out and doesn't say anything after a certain play, because there isn't necessarily anything to add, that they don't feel as though they're obligated, as though I have to say something, those are usually the guys that know what's up and are good at what it is that they do. And I don't know where Tom Brady, you know, who's actually really good. I don't know if we can talk about, you know, the station he's on, but FP Santangelo, I think I've told you this, as a color guy, is really good. As an analyst in baseball, on radio, he just knows when to pick his spots. He's usually, as a former player, has really good insight, and he's got a sense of humor, but he doesn't dominate. There's times when I'm driving around and I'm going from point A to point B, and I'm not even sure if he's on the call because he won't say anything for a good stretch. But when he does talk, it's usually worth, you know, listening to.
Well, I think that's probably also because he's got a decade of experience as a television color commentator with the Washington Nationals. So he's been in the booth for quite some time. On the other side, I do want to, again, I want to get back to this idea of what, I don't know, like the blank check thing has been kind of consuming me, Dan. And you said something earlier in the segment that I want to use to transition, because the other piece of news that sort of leaked out this week in regards to contracts was about Steph Curry. And I think it flew under the radar because it was expected. It was a large sum of money. It was deserved. But that is truly the one blank check athlete, I believe, that resides in the Bay Area, is Steph Curry. And I think it was significant for a couple of reasons, and I think it also sets up a bit of a domino effect for the remainder of the Warriors offseason. We can dig into that on the other side. We can also get back into, you know, how we feel about particular broadcast crews, how they impact our viewing experience, and also right now where you're at with the San Francisco 49ers. So the form is yours on the other side as we move into our final hour here on Saturdays on 95.7 The Game. Evan Giddings alongside Dan DeVone. 888-957-9570 is the number, also the number for the Xfinity Mobile text line. We're back after this.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.